I guess I ought to give an update of what went on at the Wildlife Board meeting. All the items that we approved at last board meeting by the Northeastern RAC, we had approved everything. We'd made a couple of recommendations, and the State Wildlife Board approved everything but one item. And the one item that they approved, the bucks and bulls, I had highlighted. And then number five, the big game preference points recommendations. It was an action item, but they did not approve the preference points as it was presented. They wanted to leave it as the current preference points system. So it left the preference points as is. But everything else was as we had recommended to the State Wildlife Board. So that's what happened out there. That was on the 1st of December. And anyway, and that's some of the RAC procedures or introductions and things that have happened. So that's item number one. Item number two on our agenda, has everybody reviewed the minutes and reviewed the agenda for tonight? So that is a kind of an action item. Do I have a motion and a second on approving the minutes?
I have motionly approve it.
Wayne.
Yes.
Just a clarification on the minutes from last month's meeting. The motion that failed, the motion that I made about restricting harvest on colored bighorn sheep, states in here that it includes the mountain mevo, I think. And that wasn't, just as a clarification, it's kind of a moot point because the motion failed, but for the record, it didn't include the mountain mevo unit. So, anyway.
Okay, and I guess, and that was on the bucks and bulls and some of that.
The mountain mevo was a recommendation or request that came to us for to extend down into that hunt boundary down into there. Dan did not make that as a recommendation. That was made by SFW, I believe, and then it went on to Salt Lake and failed.
It went on to Salt Lake and failed. They did do the Wasatch Hunt Unit boundary and the 9 mile Range Creek Bighorn Sheep boundary. That was the only changes out there. Okay. So, noted.
So I'll second that motion.
Beth made?
Yeah.
Okay. So, with that, we will, I guess I've kind of done number three, too, to give you an update on what went down at the State Wildlife Board. Let's do four.
Okay. For the regional update, we've got a lot of things going on right now. Just wanted to report, first of all, last time I presented our app, our new app for the phones, and between now and then, we have, there was 10,000 downloads of that new app. So it's going pretty good. We'd like to see a lot more. It's pretty helpful, as I said. And so I just wanted to let you know where we were at with that. With that trial license, we've had 700 to 800 folks that have done the trial license. And the average age of those is 22 years old. And so we are catching some of those folks that they're past the young folks' age, but getting into the 20s, and that didn't take hunter ed, that have an opportunity for the trial hunting. And so that's kind of meeting that. We're expecting that to pick up here again next year. In the mentor program, we had about 500, and they were about the 14-year-olds that used that permit, used that mentor program. Our wildlife section are just finished up their deer classifications for the year, and the deer are looking looking really good. Our buck-to-bill ratio seemed to be up quite nicely, and they don't have all of the data analyzed yet, but Dax did tell me that it was looking good. We also have done some bighorn sheep surveys over in the Daggett County area. I don't have that data as yet, but we did get them completed, and I'll have that information here probably the next time we meet. We just completed this last Monday a deer collaring project on the south slope, and we collared, well, how many, Randall?
60, basically.
We collared 60 deer, and we also collected sonogram, right?
Ultrasound.
I'm not a doctor. Where is our doctor?
There he is.
Okay, so. We did some of that to try and measure the health of these deer, look at fat measurements and things like that, check these deer out. We'll go back and we're going to recapture them again in March and see just where they're at, what's happened to them. And we had a good agreement with the tribe, and they allowed us to capture some deer down out there on the tribe, and we appreciated that very much. The wildlife section and some of the others will be going out on our pronghorn trapping capture. We'll be bringing, how many pronghorn are we going to be bringing back?
Up to 100.
Yeah, about 100 pronghorn be coming into this region off the Parkers.
Parker Mountain. Yep.
And so we're pretty excited about that. See if we can supplement the pronghorn that we've got out on the book cliffs and some of those areas. Our habitat section is working hard on putting together habitat projects for the coming year to be going to our habitat council, where we'll ask for funding and money to do some habitat projects. We're starting the internal effort right now, that habitat section meeting with our different sections that use them to for deer projects, for elk projects, and water projects and things like that. Our aquatic section, they're still doing the krill survey census work out on the starvation, and that'll be going for a while. And they're pretty busy on that. I'm sure they're glad, well, kind of glad that it's not real cold weather out there, but they would like ice so they can get out and check folks, but we're not getting it yet. They're working future management plans out on Red Fleet Reservoir. There's some work that we're going to have to do there, and we've been meeting with folks on that. And we're going to have to reset that reservoir and fix it for future to hold fish, to keep them out of the Green River. We're summarizing, they're busy, really busy, summarizing their data that they've collected this year and some of their fish surveys. Our law enforcement, they're doing a saturation patrols this coming week. They'll be out checking deer winter range to see and make sure that the deer are doing okay. They're busy going over their cases and evidence. On our outreach section, we just got through with the pheasant releases. I don't know if any of you had the opportunity to participate in going out there and shooting pheasants, but we released a lot of pheasants throughout the region in conjunction with Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife, who worked hard, and we put a lot of pheasants out. We had a lot of people appreciate that, and we've also had some hunting clinics, some shooting clinics, so we've been pretty busy this last little while, and it just, we don't have slow periods anymore, so, but that's everything in the way of a regional update, Mr. Chairman.
Good open weather right now. Hopefully we'll get some snow and ice. Mixed emotions there. It's good to have the warm weather. Well, let's move into item number 5 under the R657-59 private fish pond rule amendments. Trina's going to give that presentation. Thank you, Trina.
Examining slight change to the private fish pond rule. The purpose of this rule is to provide private fish growers and private pond owners instructions on following, so what species that can be grown, and then also what fish can be stocked. Whether fish stocked in private ponds needs to be sterile or whether they can be fertile. And then the responsibilities of the private pond owners and the private fish growers if they want to be providing fish for these ponds and maintaining these ponds over time. As it stands right now, if a pond owner wants to pick up and transport his or her own fish, he has to go through the COR process. So there are some instances which would allow for what's called an exemption, meaning you don't have to go through the COR process. It saves time, it saves money, and that sort of thing. But automatically, if you want to pick up your own fish, which that does save the pond owner quite a bit of money, so a lot of people do try to go that route. They're unable to simply because of how the rule stands now. They have to go through the COR process. It tends to be somewhat cumbersome, a little bit time-consuming, and can be kind of expensive. I think it's $100 or $200 for an inspection fee, and so even with all that, if they were to go pick up their own fish, it still saves some money. So this is we feel like this is a good change for everyone involved. They will be allowed to transport their own fish without a COR under certain circumstances, and those are if they're transporting small amounts, like less than 50 pounds. If you think about it, greater than 50 pounds becomes kind of difficult for just a private pond owner anyway. If they're transporting sterile rainbow trout, which are very low-risk species and they're sterile, so there's very minimal risk if something were to happen to that truckload of fish, or if they get planted somewhere else. And then also they have to sign a formal affidavit or contract assigning responsibilities and penalties for not living up to the responsibilities identified. And we think that's pretty straightforward, and it's pretty standard for just moving forward with this. So that was all that Drew had put together. Pretty simple request for change, and I'll take any questions.
Okay, any questions by the rack? No. Any questions by the public? Okay. We have no number five. We got comments. Okay, under the comments, if you are an individual, you have 3 minutes. If you are representing a group, you have 5 minutes to make that comment. After those comments, then the RAC will discuss it and make a motion. So this is Ken Strong. If you wanted to come up and you wanted to talk about...
Ken Strong, and on this issue I'm representing myself. I had a chance to go through and read the full program that the division's come up with, and I think that it's a great program. It works a little bit more towards the stopping of illegal transporting of or illegal transplanting of fish by requiring different things with the triploids and so forth, and so I would recommend that you guys accept this rule. I think it's a good one. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Okay. Ken, yeah.
The two or three large pond owners that I'm familiar with have had quite a bit of trouble with the blue. Is it the blue herrings? Come in and get their fish. It's kind of discouraged them a little. The people I know, have you seen this? It's kind of something.
You know, I've not heard that from private pond owners, but I can only imagine between cormorants, pelicans, herons, that it could get expensive because those birds can definitely eat up some fish.
Well, Shane Mayberry, I know him down on the creek. He lost about everything he had in his pond.
If a pond's not deep enough, yeah, you can pretty big hit.
So it's not something you're seeing that's going on with migratory birds.
Well, I'm sure that it is, but I don't hear about it from private pond owners. But we certainly see it in a lot of the fish stocks that we manage, too. I mean, those pelicans are out on a lot of our water bodies for a reason, as are the osprey, cormorants. Just, you know, we stock a lot more fish than what private pond owners do. But, yes, surprisingly, I haven't heard from them.
You haven't had a problem with that with private pond owners.
Okay, Okay, any comments by the RAC? Comments or discussion? Do we need to have a discussion on what was presented? I'll entertain a motion if there's no discussion.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we go ahead and accept this proposal for the division as it was presented.
I'll second it.
Okay, a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous? Okay, unanimous. All right. Black Bear recommendations and rule amendments. Leslie McFarland.
I'm surprised everybody didn't get up and leave.
She's pretty popular tonight.
They're all here for Black Bears.
I'm actually glad to see that they're here. It means they care. Hopefully, can you hear me? Okay. I'm going to apologize up front. Every other RAC meeting this week, I've had a coughing attack in the middle, so I'm fighting a cold. So I'm really going to try hard not to do it tonight.
It's two of us. You're okay.
As long as you don't mind hearing me hack. So before I go into what our recommendations are tonight, I want to give you a little bit of background on our Black Bear Management Plan. We do currently have a 12-year management plan that went through the public process and was approved in 2011. The plan was assembled and recommended by the Utah Black Bear Advisory Committee, which consisted of representatives from the following groups that are listed on the slide there. The plan requires that we recommend permits on a 3-year basis so that we will have 4 recommendation cycles every 3 years. This is our second recommendation cycle underneath this plan. So the permit numbers that we're recommending tonight are based off of the plan requirements, and they'll be split between several different seasons. So our plan goal overall is to maintain a healthy bear population in existing occupied habitat and expand distribution while considering human safety, nuisance problems, livestock and depredation concerns, habitat limitations, and possible impacts on other wildlife species. A healthy bear population is defined in our plan is one that has a proportion of breeding age animals that will maintain population levels consistent with the habitat and maintain genetic variability. Like I said, our objective is to maintain a stable bear population while considering other wildlife populations, the level of human-bear conflict, and general population dynamics. Our plan establishes 3 harvest strategies for the state and each unit that has bears, and each one of these units falls under one of these strategies. A light strategy is one where there is little to no human-bear conflict, and one where we manage for older age males in our population. In order to select the light strategy, you have to have little to no human bear conflict. We do have units throughout the state that fall under this strategy. Most of our units fall under the moderate harvest strategy. And this is one where wildlife services take and DWR take is quite high. We have a moderate level of human-to-bear conflict. We try and maintain adult males at least 5 years and older. We want to see 25 to 35% of our harvest consisting of adult males 5 years and older. We also do like to see female harvest, about 30 to 40% in our harvest in these units, because we are still trying to maintain and control populations. So we do like to see some female harvest. And again, it's one where we have moderate levels of human-bear conflict or livestock conflict. A liberal harvest strategy is used on less than 25% of our units. And this year, we only have 5 units that are under this strategy. Some of them are in this region. In this, we want younger males to make up the majority of the harvest. and we want female harvest to be about 40 to 45%, because we are trying to affect the population. And in this area, our human bear conflict and our wildlife services take is exceeding our sport take. So a couple, just our current status for bears in our state right now. We've got really good age data for bear populations in Utah. When you harvest a bear, you're required to bring that bear in, and a tooth is removed, and then we get the age of each of those animals. So we are able to use a population estimator. They call it, it's kind of a population reconstruction, because you can't go out on the ground and count bears. You can't ride for them. We have a hard time estimating the population. So there's a technique where we can take the ages of the known bears that are harvested, and you can take and put those back in, and you can construct the population backwards. And based on the ages of the bears that you have, you can determine how many bears you have in your population based on the age structure that you're seeing in your bears. It's a really common popular technique for estimating bears. Also from this, we can get our estimated growth rates, our population growth rate. And right now, we're seeing an increase in our bear population of 5 to 6% annually. We estimate from the ages that we're seeing in our harvest that we have about 1,500 adult male bears. So if you take that, you can take your females, and a female to male ratio were 1 to 1, you'd have 3,000 bears. But we know we target male bears more, so we know that the female population is higher than that. So right now we're estimating that our bear population is about 4,100 bears. That's up from a density abundance estimate in 2009 of 3,500. Also, the other thing that we use to look at our bear populations, we use bear netting data. So we take each of our regional offices, each of our regions has female bears that are radio collar. And we go into those dens every year, and we look to see if they have cubs present. If in a 5-year period they have yearling bears in the cub with the female, we consider that a population recruitment if that occurs 2 out of 5 years. And that did happen in this past 5-year period. So we are seeing population growth in our bears. So I'll explain this slide a little bit. So the line with the triangles are the number of permits that we have issued. You can see when this plan went into effect, we increased our permits that we issued quite a bit. But you have to realize that that jump in permits actually came from spot and stock permits. We issued 95 that in 2011. And so that's what that big jump is. But spot and stock permits are a very low success harvest. So when you look at the harvest overall, which are the lines below, you don't see a tremendous increase in sport take. So the sport take are actually, on the light gray bars below are the sport take, our harvest. And this past year it was 270 bears that were harvested by hunters. The dark gray portion of that bar is wildlife services and nuisance take by our agency. On an average year, we see about 50 to 60 bears that will be taken. This year, an update from the previous draft meetings, because I did get some other data, we're at 91 bears that have been removed by wildlife services in our agency. So that's quite a dramatic increase. Normally, on a year, our agency is only responsible for about 6 or 7 of those. This year, we've removed 37 bears. One of the objectives of our plan is to try and reduce the number of bears that are taken by wildlife services and by our agency, and try and use hunters to do that. We want to try and make it so that that's more available and that we're using our sportsmen to help us harvest these bears instead of it being us. So that is an objective of the plan. And so one other thing that I'd like to point out is that although we did increase permits, our harvest didn't increase dramatically. So what we're trying to do is look at ways to increase, with the permits that we've got, increase harvest success. So we have some proposed season changes that we wanted to try and see if we can increase success. So we'll go into those. Now, so there have been, our regional offices actually during our spring hunts have received, spring hunts probably more than the fall hunts, but every year we do get a lot of complaints from conflicts that occur between either bait hunters and hound hunters, either when hounds accidentally, I mean, if you set out on a bear and there's a bait station there and the bear's been going to the bait station, more than likely it'll run back through the bait station. And so it does cause some conflicts, and we do get complaints. The different rats have asked me how many complaints. I can't tell you the number, but it is enough that it concerns our offices. So in an effort to try and first solve that conflict and then try and increase harvest during different periods, we're proposing a split on the spring season and the addition of a summer season. So the spring season would run consistent with what it has in the past, except for we're adding a week on to go to June 5th. During this period, no baiting would be allowed, and you could use hounds or spot and stock only. So the second season would begin June 6th and would go to July 2nd. And again, this is an attempt by us to try and change some of the pressure on bear populations without impacting them dramatically. There are some concerns with us implementing a summer season. And I'll go into that in just a second. But the other change to this would be that with baiting, so we would allow baiting during this period, but no hounds. We would also allow harvest with any legal weapon over bait. Previously, it was limited to archery tackle only. We believe that by doing this, we're opening up opportunity for different types of sportsmen that may not use archery equipment or don't have access to hounds. Now, you could apply for a baiting station, and then you'd have the opportunity to hunt with a rifle over bait. During this time period, we would not want hounds out because of concerns for fawning and calving seasons. Also, the summer months, we do see an increase in the number of female bears with small cubs. In that earlier season, that's when most of the boars are emerging from dens, and there's less chance of having that happen. So as you get later into the season, there's more chance for that type of conflict. So we do want to limit the number of hounds during this period. We listened to what some of the bait hunters had concerns with. It does take time to get bears accustomed to coming to a bait station. You don't just put bait out and bears find it. So we were willing to let people that have this permit begin pre-baiting May 30th, but they would not be allowed to begin hunting until June 6th. Just trying to make sure I there is a proposal that has been presented to all of the other rats, and I just want to take a second to address that. There has been a request that we combine the permits for both the spring and the summer season, and then allow the hunter to choose which season he chooses to go in. We do have some serious concerns over that because, like I said, during the summer season, we do have more females with smaller cubs out. If more people choose, more people choose to hunt the summer season with more bait stations. On some of these units, there's a total of 35 or so permits. You could have 70 bait stations out during this time period if everybody chose to go here. So the other thing that we're unsure of at this time is by changing harvest strategies and allowing any weapon over bait, we're not sure how much that success is going to increase. And we don't want it to increase too dramatically that we affect the population all at once. So we're recommending limited numbers of permits during the summer season. And then we want to evaluate it and really take a look at it and see what it does before we try and allow it to be more open. And we want to have it to be kind of restrictive at first so we can see what it really does before we open it up. So the next hunt strategy is the harvest objective. The past 3 years we were evaluating this technique on several of the units. It did help us accomplish some of our goals in some of the units, some of them they didn't do so well. If it occurs in the spring, it will have the same season dates as the spring hunt, and then there's some fall dates on the 9 mile and a spot and stock no hounds on the 9 mile. During this hunt, unlimited permits are sold during the season and then the unit closes when the quota is met or the season ends. On our fall limited inch, we have one other new hunt that we're proposing. This would be on the Book Cliffs unit only. It would start August 10th, go to September 11th, which is the end of the limited entry archery elk hunt. This would be archery only, bait only, and it's an attempt to keep bear harvest going during those months, but reduce conflict between archery hunters and other weapon types. You could have a bait station or you could do spot and stock during this period, and again, it's only on the Book Cliffs. We're not really proposing any changes to our fall limited entry season. There are two areas where they have different season dates. On the Book Cliffs, Bitter Creek South, because of that archery only, bait only hunt going through the archery season, we have to cut that a little short on that front end. So the fall limited entry on the Book Cliffs would be October 6th to November 19th. On the LaSalle and San Juan units, that region in particular has had a lot of problems with conflicts between hound hunters and limited entry elk hunters on the San Juan unit in particular. It's become quite controversial down there. The Forest Service receives a lot of complaints. Our office receives a lot of complaints. So for the past 3 years, they've had a shortened season on there to try and prevent those conflicts. And that region has again asked for that shortened season. We have limited entry spot and stock. Again, we'll have a hunt on the Book Cliffs Little Creek Roadless in the spring and the fall. And then on the LaSalle and San Juan units through October. A limited entry multi-season, this is what was known previously as a premium permit. We're changing the name to be consistent with Big Game, which recently changed the name of premium to multi-season so that they're all identifiable as the same name. On this hunt, if you draw this one out, you can hunt any of the seasons approved for the unit that your permit is authorized for. You must use the appropriate weapon type and method authorized for the season that you're hunting. You cannot use this permit during harvest objective seasons or for pursuits. So I'll just explain these tables a little bit. So each of these recommendations are broken down by region. The first column are the spring limited entry season permits. Second column is summer limited entry permits. And then the next one over is fall limited entry and then multi-season. And then the yellow column are the total number of permits. And then to the right, you can see the adjustment up from 2015. And so if it has a plus, we went up because to address, we increased permits in those units to address limited nuisance and depredation problems. Some stay the same. And I'll have Randall come up and do your regional recommendations here.
I just microphone a little bit.
Sorry.
One question did just come up right, and just I just got asked just a moment ago, and to clarify on this archery only fall season, which impacts the booklifts in our region out there, that really is to address the big game, the issue with the conflicts we've had out there with big game hunters, archery big game hunters primarily, there in September that have their once in a lifetime essentially big game hunt, and then have hounds come run through where they're hunting and those kind of things. And it is a fairly common problem that we've had out there. It is a real conflict. So what we've done instead, if you notice, was to open up the 6th of October. Normally the hunts shut, just close down during October because of the conflicts that are there with the general season hunts and the other big game hunts. Booklifts is unique. It's, you know, it's one of the few units around that is limited entry for basically everything big game wise out there. And has that issue, but by doing so, we have very little problems in conflict with them. And the deer come down early on the book list, too. As most of you know, the deer move down, and it's a lot of the elk do, but don't move, the deer move down regardless if there's snow or not. They come down in elevation. And so during October, we'll go out on the book list, we rarely have the conflicts. The animals are not where the bears are anymore. They, for the most part, move down to lower elevation. And so we feel comfortable giving you the dates in October, essentially, the hunting signal. You'll still take a few days reduction. It's a few days less for hunting bears. But it gives you some quality days, some really good days in October when you've got better weather for hunting and those kind of things there too. So if there's other questions later, you can bring that up. But hopefully that kind of explains why we're trying that out there to see if that will reduce the conflicts and yet still give some really quality hunting opportunity that's out there and those kind of things too in the fall. So anyway, okay, we'll get a little bit specific here. I think I'm going to start off actually from the bottom first. If you look down the Wasatch Mountains, Bennequin Current Creek, because that one is the one unit in the state that's had a spring limited end, or a harvest objective, sorry, it's been spring harvest objective for the last 3 years. That's over just west of Duchesne, basically over there, north and south of the highway. All that area over there has been harvest objective for the last 3 years. It was the experiment that we tried it somewhere in the state. It's been very successful. It worked really well. We have a quota of 10 animals in the spring on the spring hunt there. It has no bait during that season. We closed that down because the number of potential problems with having a lot of baits and an unlimited number of baits on a harvest objective would get out of hand and have a lot of conflicts that way, and then we'd have baits everywhere and things like that too. So, but we tried that. Over the very first year, like any time you go harvest objective on any kind of animal, the first year there's a big influx. You know, we hit the objective. We actually had enough, two bears killed the very last day of the hunt that first year, and they went kicked over to 11 that first year that we actually harvested. In the past on that unit, we'd averaged only like 3 to 4 bears per year being harvested. But we had a lot of nuisance problems and a lot of depredation on livestock problems. So that first year, we had a big jump in harvest. And we said, but that's why we planned to do it for 3 years to see if it settled out. And it did. It settled out the next year to 6 bears harvested and the next year to 11 bears harvested. Or not, sorry, 7. So it was 11 the first year. Dropped down to 6 the second and then 7 the third year. And everybody is really quite pleased with it. The folks that we interact with over there, the hounds that we're talking to, everybody really likes it. There was a real concern that it was all going to be a bunch of non-residents that come in and hit that unit. Over there, we've had 160. This year, we had 161 harvest objective tags sold in the state to residents, and we had 4 to non-residents. So for the Wasatch over there, at least, that is not an issue at all over there. I think it's far enough from the borders that that's not a problem. No one wants to travel that far to come in and go chase over there. That may be different in other units that get close to the border, and I'm sure we'll discuss that here later tonight. But on the Wasatch, that's been quite successful. We have seen an increase in some harvest, a marginal, you know, a good increase, but not an extreme harvest over there. That's the one unit this year. And then this year in our region, we ended up, like she was mentioning, there was a bumper year for problems with bears being so dry like it was. We had 37 problem bear incidents in our region here that we had to deal with. The DWR ended up having to put down 8. Well, we took out 8 bears. One of those we were able to get a hunter to take and utilize. We tried on several others to have hunters do it. And the hunters either didn't have enough time to get there or weren't willing to be to make it a priority enough to get it done, but weren't willing to kill to get anything done for us, and we ended up having to remove the other seven other bears. So a total of 8 bears were removed in nuisance and public safety situations this year in our region. Wildlife Services took another 7 on top of that in our region. And actually, some of the new ones she added makes that 9. We found 2 more that they added. We had just got the information on this week that we're taking at the far west end of the region. We're actually 9 the Wildlife Services ended up taking just in the units here in our region. So that's a pretty significant amount of bears that we want the public to be taking and not us. So that's kind of the year we had this year. But the Wasatch Mountains, Spring Creek, Connecticut, where we reduced the bear density a little bit. We had one wildlife problem, one bear over there that was depredating on livestock. We had one problem there, and it's on a big private piece of ground that's locked up that doesn't let anybody hunt it. They kind of created their own problem. And so we saw 0 nuisance on the Wasatch Mountains this year. It used to be the worst one in our region. So there is improvement when we've been able to go in there and increase some harvest, do it with the harvest objective. Harvest objective did give us, we feel real good about it because it's given us a different kind of hunter mentality a little bit. People are willing to take a little lesser quality bear maybe if they get one up a tree because they can buy a tag next year if they want to. It's not their once in a lifetime bear hunt opportunity. They can take something, maybe a younger boar or something like that, or another one that they wouldn't take otherwise. They would have held out thinking it's their last only chance ever in their life to take a bear. They hold out and we end up with a lot of young problem bears getting into trouble in places like that too. So it's been quite successful over there and been good. We recommended basically to maintain, we'll stay with the same quota on the Wasatch Mountains for this year, the same 10. We are recommending that we add the summer bait season there, and thinking in all of our units here, I think in our region, we're going to see a real difference on where people have the opportunity to harvest bears with this later season in June. As was mentioned quite a bit, there's road access issues on a lot of our units out here. We get too much snow. You can't get, the forest doesn't open the gates until Memorial Day sometimes. That affects certain units. Other units are affected just by the snow and the access. You just can't get up. I mean, if the road's open, you can't get up there to hunt. And guess where a lot of our nuisance problems end up being? Real high elevation, back up in there where no one's taking bears. And you guys know that. You see it. So what we think that this later season gives us the opportunity to do is, especially by letting people hunt later on, they'll be able to go in and hunt at some higher elevation areas and maybe target some of these problem areas that we have. I plan on calling them and telling them where we got problems and say, go up in those areas, if you will. We got problem bears up there. Go help us out. Cooperate with us here. And we're hoping this summer season can be real beneficial that way. That is one reason we're cautious to go too early with those guys. We don't want them to kill the first 3 days of June. I want them to be able to get into some of these other areas and take some bears up to some other areas too that we currently haven't been able to do that with in the spring while not creating the problems with the cubs on the ground and all the deer and the doe fawns and those kind of things. So we are recommending those summer seasons on all our units in this region. As you can see, that will be the bait only type season basically, and spot and stock if they choose to. But that's what those permits will be. The fall seasons right there on the, so we've got 5 permits for the Wasatch recommended. There'll be 7 on the fall limited entry. That's just basically what you have right now. No real changes there other than the book lists. There won't be other real changes on those dates and those kind of things. And so they'll have these 7 limited entry permits on the Wasatch Mountains, which is a drop of a couple of tags. That's a decrease from 9 last year because we had to try to keep close to what we had permits-wise last year according to the plan, and that's because we added those 5 bait-only tags there too. And so we took a little bit of the hunting pressure there instead, and we'll see how that goes this year and see what that results in for harvest success. The multi-season of the premium tag, there's still one. Overall, though, that is still, by adding the summer tags and adjusting those a little bit, we've ended up with a total of an increase of 4 tags on the Wasatch Mountains, Kern Creek, and Medical. On this, the next, I'll just go up from the bottom there. The South Slope Diamond Mountain Bonanza, that one will be it'll stay with 15 limited entry tags. That one had 20 tags last year for the spring hunt, so it is a decrease of a few. What we did is we went through and looked at how many of those spring tags were being on all these units. We looked at them and said, how many are being used by archers? What's the average numbers of baits that are being taken on these? And that's where we've come up with the numbers for that bait season next to it on the second column. So we had about, on average, was around 6. So we put 6 tags in that later season, and pull them out of the spring hunt. So basically, you're going to have the same number of tags for the spring that we've had before being used by hounds and that kind of thing. And the bait hunters will be in a separate pot, being applying for a separate group of limited entry permits. And that's what would be their choice, and that would be there for their hunts. Again, there would be no bait, even on limited entry units, unlike the Burn Bonanza. So the fall limited entry it remains basically the same. It had 7 tags last year. Again, they had every year we averaged 1 or 2 people putting in baits on that unit, so we pulled one of those tags and it went down into to make the 6 on the summertime bait season on that one. And we'll have the premium units, premium permits, those multi-season permits are basically the same. And so overall, that unit is basically the same overall as what it's been in the past. It just got that new season put in there during the summer, which we think is going to really help on that unit, help us address some of the problems on that unit, and because of the access issues on those units. So we'll move on up to South Yellowstone there. Similar situation. It has a lot of access issues because the tribal land and some of that in the spring and those kind of things. It can be a difficult unit to hunt depending on the year, the weather year, and that kind of stuff too, on how it works out. We're recommending that we have a go harvest objective on the spring on the hound only season right there, but a quota of 6. We had 10 tags on that one in the last couple of 3 years. We'll move some of those tags into the bait season there because we do get a pretty good, that one has a lot of bait interest, especially on the west end of the Yellowstone. There's a lot of folks who want to bait that. It's also a unit that we've had a lot of, the end of Vernal too, we get a lot of the conflicts on that with these units. These are the units that have there's only a road in the bottom of most of those canyons. There's not a lot of side roads up the hillside. And so if you go up, you're cutting or rigging up the bottom of one of those canyon bogs, there's a good chance you're cutting any bear cut crossing those canyons because that's the only place the roads are, is on the top and the bottom on the Yellowstone and things like that. So there's been a lot of conflicts on some of these units. That's one of them. The fall limited entry hunt, we'll have 5 tags recommended on that one, the multi-season one. Overall, that works out to be the same as far as numbers of permits that way. But we expect to see an increase in harvest because of changing over to harvest objective in the spring. We think we are going to, and I fully expect this summer hunt to be a higher success rate than what the marchers have had in the spring because of some of the difficulties for access. But that's to be decided. We'll know next year. We'll know after we try it for a year. We don't know what that success is going to be. A lot of people think it could be a high success thing, so that's why we want a limited number of permits there. On the North Slope West Daggett up there, we're recommending a harvest objective up there in the spring with a quota of 4. We've had very low harvest up there the last several years on the North Slope West Daggett, but we've had a fair number of nuisance problems on that unit too. It's been some problems, and so we recommend the summer season with 3 permits, the fall limited entry with 3, and then the 1 premium / multi-season permit. Overall, those do, again, come out the same numbers. Overall, the same numbers what we had before, but we're going by changing to the quota in the spring, we think we're going to get a little more harvest than what we've been able to get up there in the past. The book list, Little Creek, that's the roadless area. That unit's had spot and stock spring, and no hounds allowed in spring and fall out there. It's a unit that for years, when it was included in the general book list, we had 0 harvest occurring in the roadless area. Few people hunted it, but very few. Occasionally, when it happens, dogs run down in there. But it was a problem area. We were having a lot of nuisance problems with bears in bothering camps and things like that. We started that back in 2009, introduced the first spot and stock hunt in the state right there in the fall and in the spring, and that's been a very popular hunt. A lot of interest in that hunt. It's taken more bears out of there. We are at, because the numbers of bears we're having out there and the nuisance complaints, we are recommending an increase overall on this unit. Like I said, this in the spring hunt, we'll have 3 spot stock only permits. We'll have 2 on that summer bait season in there, which would be a totally new thing. Then we'll have the fall, the spot and stock hunt there. We'll raise that up to 7 permits from the 4 that it's been. Then we'll have that other, the fall bait only, that little window that we talked about earlier is going to be just during the archery season in there. It'll be the archery only with 2 permits and 1 on the premium tags. Overall, that's an increase of 5 permits for the roadless area up there. The book list. This is the rest. A and B, the book list, Bitter Creek and the South. And this is probably the one that's probably going to be the most contentious or question is about. I think that'll be the most discussion we have tonight. And probably on this first part right here. The quota, the going harvest, it's been recommended out there that we go try a harvest objective on the spring hunt out there with a quota of 20 animals for the quota on that. And that may be, there's been a lot of concerns about that brought to us. A lot of people are worried we're going to have a lot of non-residents come in from Colorado or from Wyoming come in and really hammer that unit because it is a very prime unit. It's one of our better units in the state for bears. And so maybe that's something we need to discuss more tonight for a few minutes is there another alternative there? There's been a lot of concerns about trying to limit the number of non-residents that can hunt that hunt. The problem is there's some legal issues there. The state attorney general's office tells us that you can't do that because you get into some interstate commerce laws. We went through this with Cougar, if you remember, 10 years ago or whatever. We can't legally do that according to our attorney general. He's told us that it can't be done. Now there's some folks who say, well, there's ways around it, and maybe we'll ask them to look into that, see if there is another alternative way to do that. We'll talk to them again and see, have them check and see what some other states are doing and see how they're getting around that. I think that's something we can do. But it wouldn't be available really to get it done this year, I'll be honest. That's not going to be able to happen this year. So maybe this year we have to look. If we need to, we need to look at not putting that as far as objective, but that's a real concern to everybody here still tonight. So we'll see how that goes. We recommended 5 permits for that limited entry bait season for the book list, 6 permits for the fall limited entry hunt, 5 more broke out in that archery only window that will be in there, and then 3 of the premium type multi-season permits. It ends up right that way we've got right now with the quota of 20, it would be an addition of 6 permits. If we do decide the quota is not something we want to try to do this year, then we will need to significantly increase the number of limited entry tags in the spring. We had a lot of problems out there this year. I'm sure you all heard about the dumpster, the camper diving bears. We had at least two separate bears, very different parts of the book list, breaking into trailers through the sunroof. And then not being able to get out, and then they literally blew apart the trailer almost. It was the most, if you want to see some pictures of what a bear can do, it's pretty neat to see what they can do to them. Yeah, a $30,000 camera. So. Those weren't the only ones. We had a number of other problems out there. It's really increased on the book list in the last few years. So we do need to see some increased harvest out there. And we can talk permit numbers here a little bit later, I guess, and then I'll see what works out there. But on the plan would allow us to go up to, because the book list, we are switching from a light to a moderate management strategy for the book list anyway, so we can have some flexibility there to increase some harvest on that unit and reduce densities a little bit. We could go up to a 50% increase on tags on that, which from compared to last year, we had a total of 35 tags on the book list last year. We could go add up to 17 or 18 permits to do that and still be within the plan and those kinds of things. So we'd probably have to go somewhere near that really to accomplish what we're going to need to do. So anyway, I think that's everything I've got prepared. We better take questions now. We'll take them in a minute, right? So.
Thank you, Randall.
No problem.
So then in the central region, the biggest change in that region is on the Wasatch Mountains West, where they had a huge number of livestock depredation issues with bears this past year, and they also had a great increase in the number of human conflict issues. So they are going to harvest objective on the Wasatch Mountains West with a quota of 30. This overall is an increase of 20 on that unit to try and address some issues and increase harvest. The southeastern region, the 9 mile is probably another one that
we I've meant to address that one too. Yeah. Let me just say real quick. Sorry, I forgot to talk about that. The 9 mile unit there in the middle, it includes our region too. It includes the Anthro Mountain unit over there. And so, but even though the vast majority of those bears occur within the southeastern region portion, but it affects us. And so, just real quick, what Dave, the southeastern region has recommended, they have a tremendous number of problems. They do most years down there. It is a real productive unit for bears too down the 9 mile side. They have recommended going with a harvest objective on the 9 mile, but the 15, an objective of 15 for the quota there. That's really not that much higher than what they average down there on harvest anyway. But that one, that's where they're trying to spring, and then they'll have a summer bait season with 6 permits, 16 in the rate, and the fall permit. Plus they have, when the regular season shut down, basically the October window, during the deer hunt down there, there's a lot of private land on that unit and things that affect, especially on the southeast region side. And so the only way they get many people in there is with hunters. And so they've also had, for the last 3 years, they've had a harvest objective fall spot stock hunt down there that they've done. It's been pretty popular. It's been pretty successful, worked pretty good for them. And that's where the quota was of 10 and then with premium tags. Overall, an increase of 5 tags. But by a going harvest objective in the spring, they expect to see a little change in the harvest management down there.
And then just lastly, the LaSalle and the San Juan units both had a lot of nuisance and depredation problems this past year. So they are increasing 25 permits on each of those units, and most of those went into fall spot and stock. Southern Region, most all of their units stayed relatively the same. They did not have a tremendous problem with nuisance bears except for on the Beaver unit. And so that unit is increasing by 5 to a total of 22 permits. The rest of the unit, the rest of the Southern Region is pretty much the same as it was the past 3. So overall, our average statewide success rate, regardless of what type of method you use, ranges between 42 to 45%. Then our success rates vary by the type of hunt that you do. So bait hunters are about 47% successful, hound hunters about 45%. It varies a little bit there. And then the fall spot and stock is averaging between 17 to 20%. That's actually a lot better than other states like Colorado, where their success rate's only about 12% on the fall spot and, or on their spot and stock season. So we're doing a little better on ours. Like I said, this past year our harvest was 270 bears through sport harvest. If you count in what the Division of Wildlife Services removed, that puts us at 330. Through our changes, we are hoping to see an increase in our harvest success by at least 20%. If it's below 20%, we would like to really reevaluate what we do and adjust next year. If it's greater than the 20% of 320 up there, we also would like to come in and evaluate it and maybe take things down because we feel that we've been a little too drastic too quickly. We don't want to be tied into something for 3 years that will really hurt our populations. Like I said, we're just trying to control the nuisance and depredation problems. We don't want to, you know, drop the populations and really hurt them. So that's one thing that I'm asking that's different than the plan, is that we be allowed to evaluate how the changes in season structure and things affect it and come back next year if we have problems. There is one boundary change that's being requested by the Southeastern region. The San Rafael North is not currently a bear management unit. However, several bears do leave the Central Mountains Manti South unit that is adjacent, and they do get into trouble over on the San Rafael. So the region there has requested expanding the boundary for that unit so that when they have nuisance problems, they can call hunters to help them address some of those issues. So that's the reason for the boundary change there. We're not requesting any changes to the general pursuit season. They'll be consistent with all the dates they have been in the past. Restricted pursuit season, we're also recommending that these stay similar to what they were the past 3 years. This is to address the pressure that these units receive from during the pursuit season because they are quite popular units. The LaSalle unit is lower than it was last year, as well as the San Juan, because that region has some concerns over conflicts with. There is some feeling that pursuit is causing some of their nuisance problems, and so they want to keep those pursuit numbers lower. We are recommending a change to our rule to help address some problems that we've had, primarily in the Southeastern region with bear crop depredation. Bears like to leave the 9-mile unit and go over and eat watermelons in Green River, and they decimate the watermelon crops. In one night, one bear caused over $25,000 in damage. And so we're trying, this has occurred quite often. So we're trying to help these owners address the problem. The southeastern region did remove 13 bears out of the watermelon fields this year. So, the change to the rule that we're recommending is that this be only allowed in commercial cultivated crops that are established to make a profit. Has to be a minimum of 5 acres that are privately owned land, and they have to be enrolled in Greenbelt. They have to either be experiencing chronic bear damage to their crops, or they have to demonstrate that they've had a history of chronic damage. We may issue the bear control permits to the landowner, an immediate family member, or an employee to help remove the problem bear. Once a bear is killed, they have to immediately notify us. Another change that we're recommending, currently in our bear program, once you draw a permit or you purchase a before you can purchase a harvest objective, you're required to take a mandatory bear orientation course. However, by limiting it to the people that draw out, it's created a huge workload in our licensing section, because they're having to track down all the people to make them take the course before they can get their permit. Unfortunately, this has resulted in many people missing their hunt because they didn't get it done or we couldn't contact them. So what we're requesting is a change that before a hunter can apply for a bear permit, they be required to take the mandatory educational course on an annual basis. The course will be modified annually, and we want to use it as an educational tool for bear identification, population management, education, and ethics reminders. The other thing is, with us opening up any weapon over bait, we may have some newer hunters out there that have not been experienced with bear hunting before, and we want to make sure that these people are also educated. And then there are just some minor housekeeping rule modifications to make all of this stuff fit within the rule. We do have to modify the current rule to allow crossbow use that was previously approved through the racks and the boards. Changing the name from premium permit to multi-season. Changes to allow for the crop depredation. We're also going to shorten the waiting period from 7 days to 3 days on harvest objective permits, and allow any weapon to be used over bait. And that's what I have for you.
Thank you, Leslie. Any questions from the rack for Leslie or Randall?
I guess I've got one. How many of these the bears does Wildlife Services take in our region?
They took nine this year.
How does the hunter or the houndsman get involved with helping with that? Or is there an avenue that allows them to get involved with that?
So currently what we do, on the Wildlife Services thing, it's probably harder for us to do that because they need to be able to respond immediately on a livestock depredation issue, and we don't mess with that a whole lot. But when we have bears that come into campgrounds and things, a lot of times what we'll try to do is notify a hunter if we've got a season that's close or a season that's active. We try and get other people involved. If human safety is an immediate concern, we often don't go to that. We'll do it ourselves first.
Okay.
But we do try and use our hunting public to help us.
That's also why I would like to see increased harvest beforehand, before we have the problems. It seems to be tied to some bear density. When you have too many bears, they're more likely to get into trouble that way. That's why we want to see if we reduce our bear density, but if we can reduce those. It seemed to have helped on the Wasatch and Inuka Current Creek anyway, by reducing, taking a few more bears each year. It seems to have brought down a lot of those problems too. So.
I got a question, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
How much is this is related to density, and how much is related to drought?
Well, it definitely cycles with drought somewhat. But as she talked about with the population growth that we've seen over the last 10 years at least, with bears increasing, it ties back to density too, because if even if we would reduce our density a little bit, the bears will still have more food. They're not competing as heavily even on a drought year. But it definitely, drought years definitely are our bad years. There's no doubt about it. You know, we've seen that here. We can have a boom like this. Last year we had a really good mild year for nuisance, and we thought we were doing better. And it was a very dry summer last year, if you remember. This year was just the timing of the moisture means so much for bears even, and what's available for them. And it definitely is part of the factor.
Just to show you, like if you look on the permit and harvest table here back to 2002, you can see that the dark gray bar increased quite a bit in 2002, and that was a really big drought year. And so, yeah, we do see some correlation with those types of things.
Yeah, I noticed on you was talking about your spot in the stock, how it went up, and just the area I'm around, it would go up because we used to have four ponds, you got one now.
Yeah.
Right.
So let's see, you can catch them on one pond
easier.
So.
It does.
Other questions from Iraq?
So what is the purpose of the waiting period for the harvest objective?
Primarily the purpose is so that somebody can't kill an animal and then go purchase a permit.
Or put them up a tree and then
or put
them
up a tree and then exactly. Yeah, there have been some cases of that. But it's primarily prevent that.
I guess I got one. According to this.
Dan, we also have something similar like that exists on lions too. Look, the majority of our region is under harvest objective for lion, cougar lion harvest, and that's a very similar situation with them. We've had that for a lot of years.
And the request, the reason I'm changing it is to make it consistent with the lion rule.
Oh, I see. Thanks. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. According to this, it kind of looks like we're getting about a 60% success rate as far as the permits goes and the actual dead bears. Is that
on the sport harvest? It's about 47 to 50, right in there.
Yeah, it's on average, it was 42 to 45 statewide, and it does vary by area and region. But average statewide success rate is 42 to 45. That darker bar is our take.
Okay, so take just take the book clips, which we all know and love. How many permits would you have to get to take your 20 bear quota,
if
everything else stayed the same?
To see what we'd want to see, probably around like going from the 20. We had 24 this last spring. We'd probably need at least 10 more increase to see it get. So like 35-ish, somewhere 34, 35 spring permits would probably get us about the same.
If we went
to
limited entry.
If we went strictly limited entry like we did. I do agree with that, Clint. It's his district.
Yeah.
That's about what we went through this, a couple of different variations of it, and thought that's about what you probably have to have. See the harvest we need to see.
Okay, Brett's got a question here.
On that, any weapon on the bay, is that expected to make a huge change on that 47%?
We're hoping it does increase harvest. We do hope it increases the success.
We don't know how much it would be, and that's why we want to keep a limited number of permits for that.
Because we're unsure.
We don't know. It could jump, it could be crazy. Maybe it'll jump clear to 80%, and that's what concerns us. That's why we'd really like to see those permits stay as a limited number.
We want to evaluate it, kind of see what it does, and then be able to adjust later.
Okay, question on your agricultural five-acre limitation. You know, if they're growing watermelons, generally they may only grow 2 acres of watermelons, not 5 acres or more. Some may grow 11 acres, I don't know.
So the reason that it's a minimum of 5 acres is that's green belt law.
Oh, the green belt law in the county.
Yes. And so we're keeping it consistent. Is it 5.5? Okay, I'll fix it. 5.5. Sorry for that, former.
Any other questions?
I guess I got one more. You know, you talk about the Attorney General not liking us. I guess make sure I understand it. They don't want to discourage or stop Wyoming or Colorado or other state sportsmen for buying a permit. Is that a concern?
It's not so much that. I sat down and talked with them over the proposal that's been written here. There are some concerns if we start treating different groups of people differently within the state, regardless of if they're non-residents, residents, or whoever they are. So to take and say only residents can purchase harvest objective and non-residents have to do some other way to get those same permits that are unlimited, it creates some issues. I talked to him a great deal in great length. We would like some time to really evaluate it, because as soon as I get done with this, I'm doing proclamations and rule changes to get this out. And I don't really think that trying to rush and put something in like that right now would be a good thing. We'd like some time to evaluate it and do it correctly.
So it just has to do with the harvest objective portion. It doesn't have to do with anything else.
No, it's just on that. And we understand the concerns. But, I mean, we did try to pull some of that data and look at it. And this past year, there were how many non-residents that... Four?
There was four for the Wasatch.
But I mean, that's
statewide with all the three units that were harvest objected. You had four out of 165 total
harvest objected were purchased. And so, I mean, it wasn't a big deal on those other units, but we also understand that Butcliffs is its own animal.
Well, it sits right against the border. It's much closer and so to Colorado.
I was trying to kind of weigh the idea that I think there's some areas where we don't allow non-resident to even put in for an unlimited room or for a limited entry permit. I try to think down that avenue, but maybe that's not the way.
Well, the way that our thing works right now is if you have a pool of permits, we split it 90-10. So whatever 90% of the permit pool goes to residents and 10% goes to non-residents, so that we're fair and we're treating them fairly. So it does create issues to try and tweak that a little bit. So we believe that there's ways that we can do that, but we're not sure how to do it correctly right now. The first time I heard that was 5 minutes before the Central Region RAC started, and so we haven't had time to really evaluate it.
Okay.
Boyd's got a question here.
It goes back to the Commerce Clause and Interstate Commerce Clause. I was on a lawsuit myself 15 years ago regarding that very thing where we denied a sportsman from another state an opportunity to draw a permit, and they sued us, and we settled out of court, and it was a lot of money. And so the AG right now is very concerned about that. He doesn't want to visit that again and spend that much of our sportsman's dollars to cover somebody else. And that's why we have a 90-10 split. We can, if we offer them a certain amount that we can pass the smile test with, we're okay. But if we don't offer, say we have 100 permits, we offer one, that's not so good either. And so it'll be a problem if we don't walk into this knowing everything.
Any other questions from Iraq?
I have another question.
One more question.
What is the kind of the target success rate? I saw the slide that showed average success rate was 45% to 47%. And then
we'd like to increase it by 20% at least, so that we get up to 320 bears.
Okay.
20. Through this work harvest. So we're currently at 270. We want to get up to at least 320. But we don't want to go crazy above
3. 65% to 70% success is what kind of the target is for this first year.
Okay. Any other questions from Iraq? Okay, on questions from the audience, if you'd come forward, state your name at the mic, and ask the question. So we'll take questions from the audience.
Daniel Davis. One of the questions I have is in regards to the Butcliffs. Was law enforcement considered during the proposal for the abundance of proposed harvest objective units in this region?
Yeah, we discussed it with them. We gave them all these proposals go to them before we take them even to Salt Lake and those kind of things. We took them in, met, you know, and talked to them about it. And gave them everybody within the region, all of them, the opportunity to bring up any concerns or issues they have that way.
So if they didn't see a concern over the abundance of people who would be flocking into harvest objective units that would have illegal methods of hunting and be able to control that effectively, they think?
We didn't have any problem with it whatsoever over on the other units we've had at the state. And so, no, they didn't see that being much of a problem. It ended up being the same number of hunters on a daily basis that are actually out there. They aren't all there all at once.
More focused in one region instead of a couple regions?
There's potential for them to be here, but actually by having what they liked about it, actually, when we talked to a couple of them, was that having several units that work by making 4 and 5 units in the region in our harvest objective. It's just like lions, what we've done it for cougar now for how many years. It does the same. The hunters disperse themselves after. But the first year will be crazy. You know, just like it was on, every year the first year is bad when you try these, and it was on cougar, it was when we did the barrel and the Wasatch. But hunters themselves, you know, once they find out that it's not the greatest unit in the world, but they can't kill every bear behind every tree, they go where they like to hunt, and that they know they can go to and it's close to their house, and they distribute themselves back out after that. So, no, we didn't, when we discussed it, they're worried about the first year. They know the first year is going to be rough, and that was an issue when we talked about that, but after that, they agree with us that they expect to be just like lions, that it will settle down and become a pretty reasonable one for large, on all units.
Another question, Mr. Chairman. Was there any consideration for applicants for some of these desired units that would go harvest objective that's been put in for over a decade, a dozen years, just like a premium deer unit or elk unit? To some people, it's a once in a lifetime also.
So on the harvest objective, so there's a couple of things here. When we're trying to manage the population, we have to do some things to help control the population. Unfortunately, the bonus points and that type of thing, if we have to have a more drastic strategy, kind of go out. But you have to look at that unit overall. There are different hunts that are offered after that first harvest objective that you can still apply for and draw.
Was there one more?
Okay, one more question. You had plenty there. Yeah.
About how many people would you suspect in the state? I know it's a speculation, but you have 850 applicants for one unit, and it goes to harvest objective. How many people would you propose or suspect would show up on a harvest objective unit once it's turned over to a free range potential?
I'll let Clint speak that. He knows unit better than I do.
Yeah, my name's Clint Sampson. I'm the biologist out there in Bookcliffs. I know quite a few of you guys. The influx to me, I look at it, I've spent a fair amount of time out there the last 7 years, and you look at how many people go out there just to pursue, I really don't see it being a huge influx from that. I mean, because it's a popular area. It's a fun place to go. It's remote. There's a lot of bears, and it does get a lot of pressure already from people just out there pursuing on top of the limited entry guys. And so I look at it as, you know, you might put some more tags in their pockets as they go out, but I really don't look at it as a huge landslide of people coming in. When you're out there and you see how many people just go out there for the chance to run one, to get one up a tree, I really don't see that as a huge concern. Personally.
Spring pursuit's already in limited.
Right.
Okay. Sorry, there's not as many people want to go out there in spring pursuit right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions from the audience?
I got one.
Okay, stand with the mic there. State your name.
Dennis Ingram. My question was, I know you've been adding the bear harvest, like for if these landowners are issued tags on the Green River on the watermelon patches. Will that be added to the next year, subtract from next year harvest, or will it be added to the fall harvest?
Those wouldn't count in the harvest at all.
No,
it has nothing to do with sport
take
or
anything.
Okay.
Any other questions from the audience? One more question.
Hi, Jessica. My question is, we discussed the fact that when you do limited entry, you can control like your number of out-of-staters and some different factors like how many dogs are out there. I know that like Clint said that the spring pursuit is open, but your out-of-staters are obviously going to be drawn more. You're a lot more willing to drive that far if you can actually possibly kill a bear. So why would you go to harvest objective instead of just upping the number of limited entry?
Do you want to take a minute? Do you want me to start?
Go ahead.
you know, like we mentioned a few minutes ago, there's just a different mentality that occurs with harvest, objective harvest, a little different attitude on what people are willing to take. When you go straight limited entry, they really do believe it's going to be a once-in-a-lifetime bear tag, you know, and I'm sure most of you agree with that. And they hold out for the biggest, you know, nastiest-looking bear they can find out there, and it's got to be a perfect bear. And, you know, they put how many of you guys put them bears up trees or over baits? How many come in? If he's not big enough, you don't take him. By going to harvest objective, you kind of change a little bit of the nature of what gets harvested a little bit, too. When you take out some of these problem bears, it may not be the biggest, but they are some of the ones that cause some of our trouble, too. And so we reduce the number of the bear density out there by taking more bears and still actually not even take away all the big mature boars that are out there. You actually take out some of the younger bears that are getting into trouble, but aren't necessarily even always the trophies. And the guys who want to can hold out as long as they want to for a trophy until the unit shuts down, you know, until it closes. It gives some other opportunity that's out there. Another real issue we're looking at is trying to create more opportunity for taking bears. And that's, if you look at this whole proposal of the summer bait seasons and the little archery bait season, trying to create as much opportunity out there to get as many people involved with hunting bears and caring about bears in the state of Utah as we possibly can. The more people that hunt bears, the more interest we have and support for hunting bears in the future. And so if we can bring in people who aren't going to put in for 10 years because they don't own dogs, but they can buy one and go with Cousin Ed or whatever, their friends, and get out and hunt, or even go just spot and stock hunt, we're creating a huge opportunity by going to harvest objective. If we keep a limited entry, all we're going to do is add 10 or 11 more people who get a hunt in the spring. If we go harvest objective, you may let 50 to 200 people go hunt bears in the spring out there. Who knows? We don't know how many it's going to be. There's a lot of opportunity to create. Well, it's not going to be, but it's real. I mean, really, you create opportunity. You could have 200 spot and stock guys who want to go out there and hunt. Are they going to have very high success? No. Are they going to go out and have an opportunity to hunt? Yeah, we have guys who buy the harvest objective tags on the Wasatch that are taken, that we have 146 of them who bought tags on that unit, and there aren't near that many of them who are out there running hounds. A good number of them, because they call me and ask me where to go hunt and things like that. So I know I get a lot of calls from spot and stock guys who have very low chance of just finding a bear, right? Just driving around with, how many bears have you seen without your dogs or without a bait? It doesn't happen very often, especially in the, you know, a shortened season like that. But yet it's creating the opportunity and they love it. And I'll tell them right up front, you have very low chance, and they love it. They think it's the greatest thing. They've never got to hunt a bear, and they get the neatest thing. So it's an opportunity too.
She's got one more question.
Can I ask one more question? Sorry. I was also wondering, like, I can see what you're saying there, but aren't you worried a little bit that if we do have a large influx of people, that the anti-hunters and those who are against hounds are going to come out of the woodworks because they see all these bajillion hounds running around, and even other outdoor enthusiasts, that they might turn against the houndsmen because they don't like having hounds running through their camp when they're out camping for the weekend and it's 4 o'clock in the morning and there's 50 hounds that come through their camp.
So let me tell you, like, right now there is a big interest from, I have been to the rack meetings on the front. I have been receiving lots of emails, and I know several have gone to rack and board members. Against the issues right now that they're citing are increasing permits. They don't want to see increasing permits.
This is from the anti-hunter
group. So what we're seeing right now, it's actually the one I got today liked the any weapon hunt because they felt that it injured less bears, and they actually were against archery, which is already in place. But most of it has been centered around not increasing bear permits or harvest, and not adding the summer season because of concerns over small cubs being abandoned or killed.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to the comment part of this item. I've got three individuals and two from Fish and Wildlife. Josh and Ken Strong, you both have different comments. Why don't you guys start? Ken, go ahead. Ken, go ahead and start, and Josh.
Whoops, I give you. That's all right. Can I just cut this out?
Ken Strong.
Turn the lights on.
I'm representing Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife, and we got together with the Utah Bowman's Association, the Utah Houndsman Association, and the United Wildlife Cooperative, and SFW. We met and discussed the proposals concerning the bear hunting. We jointly support the division's proposals with four exceptions. And the exceptions are as follows. And please forgive me, I got this notice late this morning, and it takes me 3 hours to drive out. Set summer season dates to May 23rd to July 2nd. We believe that this is the best compromise to maximize days in the field for all types of bear hunters. We understand that these recommendations creates a two-week overlap of the spring and summer seasons. We see this as a non-issue, as we have been hunting the exact same seasons with minimal conflict for several years. Set the San Juan and La Salle fall dates to mirror the rest of the state. That's August 22nd through the September 27th and October 31st through November 19th. There are only 5 fall bear permits issued on each of these units. Both of these units are very large and provide ample room for both fall bear hunting and limited elk hunting that occur together. We currently hunt limited entry elk on both units during the fall season with minimal conflicts. We believe that our recommended season dates will further reduce conflict by allowing bear hunters to spread out over more time. Draw spring and summer tags, season tags, from the same tag pool. And with the new season structure and new baiting regulations, we are concerned that historical numbers of bear hunters hunting over bait versus hunters hunting with hounds does not accurately reflect the future demand of bear hunters. Therefore, we recommend drawing both the spring and the summer tags out of the same tag pool, fairly distribute the tags to various seasons for applicant demands. And next, the fourth issue is make spring harvest objective seasons harvest objective for residents and limit the entry for non-residents. We are concerned that the new spring harvest objective seasons will draw overwhelming interest and participation from non-resident guides, outfitters, and hunters. Therefore, we recommend making these spring units harvest objective for residents and limited entry for non-residents. For example, the Book Cliffs would have a harvest objective of 18 bears for resident hunters, and a limit of the spring season with 2 permits for non-resident hunters. If this approach is not palatable, we believe a similar implementation to Idaho's approach would work. Now let me explain what happens in Idaho, and I took this right off page 101 of their proclamation. In Idaho, a resident can go out and get a bear pursuit permit. However, a non-resident, they limit to 70 non-resident hound hunter permits, and that's all that will be issued. And those permits that they get, they can only use it for other hunters and not themselves to run hounds. So they're discriminating basically against the non-resident compared to the resident. And in Wyoming, we look at the same thing. If you go hunting in Wyoming, if you're a resident, you can hunt the wilderness area with no problem. If you're a non-resident, you are required to hire a guide to hunt. Same thing with the deer. A non-resident can buy a permit, can apply for a permit, and a resident can buy a permit. The difference being the non-resident has to hunt the unit that he draws, and a resident can hunt statewide. So there's discrimination against non-residents in our surrounding states. So it's something to think about. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Ken. Josh, you gonna get up and be an individual, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay. 3 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, members of our regional RAC, I mainly just wanted to tell the division thanks for looking into so many various possibilities for the sportsmen to kill these bears. I mean, this year we're almost double. The government killed almost double what they average normally do. And they've really opened up a lot of doors to try to help the sportsmen kill the bears. And I also wanted to thank our regional biologists for looking at the houndsman's point of view and giving us the October season for our hounds, where other parts of the state hasn't done that. And I just really wanted to thank the DNR for those type of things. Thank you.
Thank you. Daniel Davies.
Daniel Davis. I represent the Uinta Basin Big Game Houndsman Association. All those stands.
Okay,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
First off, we'd like to thank the division for coming up with this plan. They did really spend a lot of time in consideration for the sportsmen and create an opportunity, and we support that 100%. They did an outstanding job. This proposal that they put together incorporates all sportsmen, not just one individualized method of hunting, and we support that. There are a few concerns, however, and one of our concerns is the harvest objective in this region. With the question I asked earlier, we feel that there will be a law enforcement issue if this majority of this region goes to harvest objective. That would leave one unit, subunit in this region to be limited entry in the spring, and that's it. It's a huge concern for those sportsmen, not just houndsmen, but sportsmen, to have all those permits that they've been putting in for a super long period of time to get that once-in-a-lifetime opportunity at a quality hunt. Not so much a quality animal, but a quality hunt. And that's a big concern to us. With what our recommendations fall in line with, it's looking out for those opportunities and the quality. I mentioned before in the questions that I asked that there was 903 applicants just for the Book Cliffs alone last year. There was 52 non-resident and 851 resident applicants. Our concern is that if we open that unit, particularly open the harvest objective, how many of those 800 applicants now have a free ride to go flock this unit, damage habitat, and have issues like that that would over-harvest or put a huge impact to that resource. Understand that the spring pursuit, all those hunters can go out and hunt any method. They can hunt spot and stock, not just by hounds. So the houndsman numbers may not change, but you will have an increase in hunters, potential issues with illegal baiting, placing baits because it'd be out of season according to the proposal that we support. And so that's a big concern because the Book Cliffs, San Juan La Salle, and the Boulder are looked at as some revered units in the state. If you get applicants that don't draw a LaSalle or San Juan tag for their first choice, likelihood is they're going to go to that harvest objective unit that they can potentially harvest that same quality of animal. And now they're looking at it as an animal harvest, not a quality experience that we look for when we draw that tag out of that period of time. So that's a big concern to us. What we're asking the RAC to consider with support of the division's proposal is to keep the units in this region harvest objective. That would be the North Slope, West Agate.
Limited entry?
Limited entry, sorry. Okay. Let me rephrase that. Yeah. Limited entry for the spring season. That would include the North Slope, West Agate, the Book Cliffs, Gooder Pick, and the South Slope, Yellowstone. We feel that falls in line with the plan in the current bear management plan that's been put together by the Bear Committee. It's recommended in there that quotas should not be used on units dominated by public land for risk of overshooting or units with high levels of recreation. And we feel that by going harvest objective, it doesn't really fit to that plan because we all know the Book Cliffs are so accessible. There's a road on every ridge, a road down every canyon, and you're going to have all the access, spot and stock, everything, and it's a huge concern. Another concern is with those units on the Ashley National Forest. Sometimes you have issues with season. The unit for the Forest Service doesn't open, so you restrict bears from being harvested, potentially due to snowfall and runoff, that you couldn't harvest bears during that period simply because of access and availability to that resource. So with that, we would recommend that the spring and summer hunt be combined to an extended season format. Currently, when we put in for an application to draw a bear tag, we can hunt any method. I can choose to hunt archery with a bait, but I can also utilize the needed hounds. And we don't see why that shouldn't be a possibility. That would allow an equal bait playing field across the base for all sportsmen to be able to be on the mountain for the same amount of time and get that same quality. And it wouldn't restrict anybody to certain days on the mountain over one other person. You would all go out there together and be able to hunt how you choose and only be restricted by the method of take on season. And that season is dictated in the proposal by the division. We also asked for the harvest objective season to be for residents and limited entry for non-residents. We feel that it's not a free commerce issue because we're talking about hunters. Guides and outfitters would still be able to conduct business on these lands, so it wouldn't affect commerce. What's that?
You're over time.
Okay.
Thank you. Dennis Ingram, I think.
Yeah, my name's Dennis Ingram, and I wanted to come and support the proposals that DWR has made on the harvest objective there. I believe we do need to disperse and spread out the hunters, not just impact a couple of units. I've hunted this harvest objective Wasatch for the last 3 years, as I have harvest objective bear since they've opened it up. And I remember when it was over the counter before there was a limited anywhere in the state of Utah, and I came to the bear meeting. And I think it was 88 when they closed it down to limited entry. So been around a long time and watched the ebb and flow of this whole situation. And I believe that the pressure and the interest is created by limited entry, not by bear hunters. I believe. I talked to one bear hunter and told me a half a dozen years ago, he said, we have 27 people in for the book list. How many people do you have? And so I think that's the problem right there, you know. There's a lot of hound dogs that recruit a lot of people to put in the tags, and then that creates the interest. And so anyway, and that interest disperses. Like Randall said, after the first year or two of harvest objective, that disperses. That's gone. People go out there, there's too much interest, too much activity. They go home, and they don't come back. So anyway, I support the harvest objective. I believe we can control this like we have lines. We can control the harvest by the objective. Something we didn't have back in the 70s and 80s, we didn't have any harvest objective. We just had over-the-counter tags. So the division has complete control over harvest. And if houndsmen are concerned about illegal activities and baiting, then they need to man up and turn people in. That's the way it goes out there. They can help law enforcement. And they find these illegal baits, go along. So anyway, that's where I'm at with it. I do support the harvest objective. And the only thing I did have concerns with really was, I had two concerns. One was Colorado, of course, with the book list, spring harvest objective. But that'll sort itself out. It'd be nice if you could limit that, but if you can't, it'll sort itself out. And the other concern I had was the bait, rifle hunting. You know, it's probably a good thing. I would say if they're bear hunters, they'll have very high success. If they're not, they won't. You know? But if you can drop a bait in the canyon cell on the ridge, and you can shoot a 300 Wesley and hit something 300 yards, it's a dead bear. Good story. So anyway, that'd probably be high. And I'm glad to see that the numbers are low and they may have to be adjusted lower. But anyway, I do support the division's recommendation. I hope that the RAC and the board listens to it and gives us a chance. I'd like to see the harvest put in the hands of the hound dogs, the guys and the men and the women feed the dogs. In the past, it's been the lucky guy that gets the tag. And I believe that us guys that feed and women, ladies and men that feed the dogs, I'll not have to run for people and not get the chance to hunt ourselves. There you go. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. J.C. Buehrer.
I'd get that down to those little short guys. So you
I hear you. I identify.
Hey, folks, I got news for you guys. Everybody in this room is not a bear hunter or a houndsman. There's one deer hunter in this room. So I guess I'm going to have to take it on myself to speak to the deer. It's like your cougars and your bears are eating. Okay? Now, one species in this region in the book list that is not up to objective is my deer herd. So, to put it in a nut, real short, real sweet, I support the Fish and Game's recommendations wholeheartedly, including the objective hunts, with one exception. Until my deer herd gets back to objective, I think that the hunt out in the book cliffs and in any other region where the deer herd is not to objective needs to not go from light to moderate hunting, but from light to liberal hunting. Bring that deer, bear, and cougar population down and keep it there until we get a balance out there. Folks, I run multiple trail cameras in the book cliffs, 9 months out of the year, for 3 years now. I guarantee you, we got a pack of predators out there. We got a bunch of them. I'm not going to argue with Leslie's modeling to count bears, because I don't have a better way. But I'll guarantee you, we got a lot of predators. And when our fawn crop survival rate is not increasing our deer herd, our numbers out there, any, even though we've gone limited entry for how many years now? We got other issues. Folks, predators, one of those issues. So I support the Fish and Game's proposal 100% here with one exception. I don't think their objective is high enough. I'd increase this.
Thank you, Jack. Okay, we have all the comments made. Time for the board to make comments or review motions to talk about the issue at hand. We can ask questions, we can do whatever.
Maybe I'll ask Randall. There's some conflicting comments here of whether there is conflict between baiters and dog hunters. Yeah. Have you seen significant conflict?
I have, and I receive a lot of complaints. Every year we get complaints from folks who, you know, houndsmen who are coming up the road and some baiter comes out, jumps in front of them and yells out at me, almost becomes a fist fight of, you know, hey, I'm running, I got my bait just up the hill, and you know I have it here. You can't be hunting this canyon. And the guy says, no, I didn't know. I was just cutting the road. And then, you know, well, you know now, you can't hunt here. And then vice versa. Okay, we hear them from the bait hunters, too. The hounds running through their baits and chasing them off. They spend, you know, they're only there so many days sitting on their bait. And they're sitting there, and the dogs come through. After they got a bear come in. That's one of their, you know, reasons why they feel they're having problems, reduces their chances of success. It is a problem. It may not be everywhere, but there's a lot of places that it is.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
I'd like to get a response on the different exceptions that the Sportsman for Wildlife has presented. You are. How much heartburn they've got, how much, it isn't that much heartburn. That's supposed to be.
So to the first exception, to set the summer season hunt dates May 23rd to July 2nd with the 2 week overlap between archery, between the bait and the hound hunters. This really defeats the purpose of what we were trying to do by separating the two seasons to see if we can eliminate conflict. By having the overlap, we just eliminated the whole reason we implemented the two seasons.
And that is the main 2 weeks of the hunt, is the last 2 weeks. There's no doubt about it. That's when most bears are out.
I mean, the things that I've heard from the groups that have proposed this, there was some concern that we weren't being equally fair between the two groups. So there was concern that the hound hunters got 2 weeks more than the bait hunters in June. But to that, I would say the reason that we extended that week into June for that spring season was because of access issues, closed gates, snow, all of that type of thing. So really, those 2 weeks are questionable as to whether they really get to go those 2 weeks on some of these areas.
Well, and then your weather sometimes.
Exactly.
If you get late spring, it's tough to get in some other areas.
Exactly. And then the second thing that I've heard is that there was concern over the heights not being so good later on into June. And so quite honestly, if we're not being fair to the two groups, I've thought a lot about this, rather than maybe have the two seasons, we would combine them back into one, have a spring season and have it end June 4th, and combine all of the permits into one season again.
If this doesn't work.
And just have it go back the way it was and put all of the permits and have an extended season into June 4th. And just have one spring season.
As far as it not working, what are you going to base that on? Conflict?
Not so much conflict. It's what I'm hearing from them, that we're not being fair and that we're not, by giving them all the same number of dates in the spring. And we only have so many dates to work with. And so we tried to give each equal opportunity. I don't know how else to fix that, because we can't go into July, that's breeding season, and then we start getting into recreation, big holiday weekends on Forest Service properties and all of that type of stuff. So we're trying to avoid all of that by ending July 2nd.
If you can figure out how to please everybody, you should be a politician.
I'm trying. But I mean, it seems to be upsetting quite a few people, and rather than have that, I would just go back to one spring season, all the permits, and have it combined like it was.
What if you rotated them from year to year?
You can't rotate hounds because of the problems with June. We can't have hounds because of fawning and calving in June, and then the mother bears with cubs. And just so you know, that is a big concern, and the emails that I'm receiving about that June season are about that. And so if that becomes the issue, we'd rather have the spring season, have it go to June 4th, and have all the permits combined there.
That's one of the other issues, the other recommendation is to pool these permits and let them choose. That makes us really nervous with that one, Mitch, because we don't know what success is going to be. Some of the speaker, comments we've heard tonight, some think, especially if they can use any weapon, can use a rifle and shoot them out for it, it could be 80% success over bait in June. We don't know yet.
To answer that, in some of these units you have 35 permits. And so if 35 permits all chose that summer season, and it can potentially affect Forest Service and all of that, because then you have 35 people that can have two bait stations, 70 bait stations in one season. And so we would rather have that set limited number so that we can kind of gauge that, because in the other RACs, the other land managing agencies have had concern over what this would do or how it would impact recreationalists in the spring months, because they're not used to hunters during that time of year. So we're trying to limit the number that are out and use it. As far as any more questions on that one? Okay. So on the LaSalle and San Juan season dates, that region has dealt, and actually this occurs across the state, that region more than any other had a lot of conflicts between limited entry elk hunters and bear hunters. In particular on the San Juan, which takes forever to draw for a limited entry elk. And there were cases where hunters were set up and hounds came through and ran the elk out, and it got ugly with some death threats and things. And so the region chose to try and address that by limiting the bear hunts so that they didn't have the overlap between the limited entry elk. So that's the reason for those season dates. Also, the Forest Service down there received a lot of complaints, as well as our agency. And then back again on the pooling of the tags in the spring season, we do have concerns over unlimited tags in that summer season and what that will do. And we really want a year to evaluate what that harvest strategy does. And if we can have a year to see what it does, then we know, okay, this wasn't a good idea, but we don't want to put it all out there and then have it be so drastic that, I mean, we just don't want to do that. We want to be cautious, but try and provide the opportunity. And then lastly, like I said, on the harvest objective seasons for residents and limited entry for non-residents, we would love to address this issue for everyone, but we're going to need some time to evaluate a way to do it without discriminating. We hear what you're saying, and we recognize that it's a valid complaint. And we will commit to look at this in the future to try and put this in, but right now, this short time frame, I really don't have an answer for that.
I'd like to make a comment back on the combined season. To me, I don't think you find a lot of bait hunters that are, you know, go on the hounds. So they're not going to go back the first season, but I can see where a lot of the hound hunters, if they don't succeed, will go into the second season. So to me, fairness as an overall pitcher, this would be a little fair, the program you guys have, in my opinion.
I guess I'm misunderstanding, but you're saying, well, how does that make it more
bait hunter, a bait hunter hunts with bait.
Yep.
You know, he hasn't got dogs and that sort of stuff. He wants the houndsman, usually got to pay for one or no friend.
Yep.
You're not going to get a lot of them guys, the six, they're going to choose to go that season. They're drawn out for that bait season.
For the lion? Oh, so bait
for the bear. They're not particularly going to be, you know, for this. Right? You see that the houndsman would be for this. So I guess what I'm saying is this would favor the houndsman, but not necessarily the bait hunter. In my opinion.
Well,
if you pull them.
If you pull, yeah. But
if you keep them separate, they both have a fair chance of drawing what they want to draw.
It'd be more of a fairness issue and to the bait hunter.
So what the concern there is that, and I can understand this too, from a bait hunter perspective. When we took and pulled those permits out, we looked at the number of baiting CORs that were in that spring season and tried to keep it equal. However, we are now increasing the opportunity from archery to any weapon. So what their concern is that we are now adding a bunch of people to this pool now that weren't there before. And I understand that they're very worried that now they are not going to be able to draw that permit because there's increased interest. And we get that, we understand that, but it's not something we can just offer unlimited opportunity on. We have to have some way to hold that. And so I understand the issue, but I understand what their concern is. And that's why they want
to figure out how to please everybody.
Well, that's why I think that's why they want to pull it so that if somebody draws it, it's a bigger group of tags to draw from. And then you can pick what you want, but it creates an issue for us because of the unknowns with harvest. Maybe after a year and we evaluate how successful any weapon is over bait, maybe we can increase those permits in that summer season, but we really don't want to do it drastically now until we can evaluate it for a year at least.
Mr. Chairman.
Other discussion comments?
Other question, yeah. So what is the rationale for having this harvest objective on these units in the forest? Where it states here in the bear management plan not to have harvest objective in areas with high use.
Yeah, let's just speak to some of the units that like the ones you'd be familiar with. The Bernal and the Yellowstone, say, for example. The Yellowstone is definitely not a unit that is dominated by public land because of all the tribal land that is there. And the low elevation country that is what is easiest to hunt in the spring is tribe. And so it fits the definition. Now, actually, when we wrote the plan and we're looking for units to be it, the Yellowstone was one of the ones we used as an example that we would like to try it on in the future to create harvest objective opportunity there. Because of the tribal land barrier that's there, all the winter range type stuff. across the entire Yellowstone subunit is tribal. And so that takes away that huge component of that unit is not even available for these guys, anybody in public time. You have to go to the very limited areas on the forest to be able to hunt and those kind of things. And so it definitely meets that criteria. The Vernal Diamond is not a unit, again, is not a unit that's actually, you think of just the forest, but the Vernal Diamond is dominated by Diamond Mountain private property and the phosphate mine, for the most part. It is the majority of the zone that you'd be able to hunt in the spring. And so neither one of those fit that, they do fit that criteria perfectly. Those are units that have limited areas that are public access for hunting in the spring and those kind of things. And that's why there's different issues. The reason we went with the Vernal Diamond and didn't put it in, it was one that could go harvest objected because it meets that, because of the private property and stuff. But we know we'd have concerns from the private property operators on Diamond Mountain, and the phosphate mine doesn't let anybody on either of those kind of things. And we're real excited to have that become harvest objected when we talked that around. And so that's why that unit was not, even though it still has a lot of private and a lot, you know, land there that's tied in with it. The Yellowstone kind of is a perfect fit for it. The 9 mile unit on the south side of the highway, the 9 mile is dominated heavily by private property and those kind of things. The North Slope Three Corners is one, I guess, that you could argue either way that way. There is private lands and restrictions up there on that one up there. It's trying to create some hunting actually to occur up on that unit. The last 10 years on up there, we're averaging about one bear a year being harvested on the North Slope Three Corners. We aren't getting the harvest with limited entry tags. We can increase tags. We've increased tags several times up there. And I don't know, maybe nobody here hunts there. I don't know where. Somebody is not harvesting bears up there very often. And yet we still have nuisance problems on that unit. And so we felt this was a way to try and create some opportunity that maybe take some of these lesser bears, again, some lesser quality animals on that unit. Does that make sense?
Other discussion for a motion?
I have one more question.
Okay.
You've talked several times about readdressing this after we go through the first year. Is that addressed in your plan? Is there language in your plan that?
No, but there's if you accept this, there's a slide on here that asks you guys to allow me to come back next year if we have issues. That we felt strongly with the changes that we're making, we wanted to be able to look at it and evaluate it and not be stuck for 3 years with something without an ability to change it if it's too drastic.
So this is not going to be set in stone for 3 years?
No.
No, if we get looking at this and there are serious concerns with the summer harvest or harvest objective or anything else, we want to be able to come back and address it next year.
Any other discussion?
Mr.
Comments?
Chairman, are you ready for a motion?
I am.
I'll move that we accept the plan as the DWR has proposed it. They put a lot of effort into this. They've tried really hard to look at what they want to accomplish and also trying to please the hunters. So I move that we accept the plan as they have proposed it.
Okay, I have a motion.
And I will second it because I think all of their arguments and the information presented is it's complete, it makes sense.
Okay.
I'll make a comment that too, where it's a 1 year deal, it makes it a little easier to go with too. I'm stuck in for 3 years.
Well, she's, you know, looked at things, they've looked at things many, many ways. It's good options.
Mr. Perry.
I have a motion and a second. Do I have a vote? All in favor? Okay. To abstain? All against? Okay. Motion passes.
Yes. Abstain,
Randy.
They were
opposed. They're opposed. You want the reasons?
Parts on it.
The reason I opposed it is I agree with the plan, but I'm concerned about this non-resident fluctuation in the book cliffs. I think we need to put something in there for that. I was down there during the archery elk hunt and went down East Canyon, and that whole canyon was full of Colorado hunters down there. And I think it's right there close to Colorado. It's good bear hunting. I think we need to add that to the motion. be my recommendation.
Can I know you're in your thing, but can I offer a proposal to
sure.
you? We have heard both in this RAC and in the Southeastern Region RAC the concerns over the non-residents, specifically on the book bus. I met with this region today before we had this meeting, and we understand the concerns. And so we're willing to change our recommendation on the book bus to eliminate the harvest objective in that unit for the spring season and turn that into a limited entry with the recommendation of
35, and until that increased tags are 35.
35, and so then it'd be a 90-10 split. And
that would give us a year to look into the legal issues to see if there is a way to, in the future, maybe go back to the harvest objective as we think would be useful out there, but yet maybe create, if there is a way to address the non-resident issue and the big flocking two issue, that would be an option if you want to see.
35, what was the count?
How does that?
Last year we had 20, this year, this spring, we had 24 limited entry tags in the spring. It would be an increase of 11 tags in the spring. We'd leave the other hunts like they are on the chart. We need to have that other harvester too, of course.
So the adjustment from 2014 would go from 6 to 17 permits.
What would that do to your very limited areas where everybody, would that affect them other areas where you have a harvest objective?
It gives more opportunities to go over concentrate there, but where our hope is by next year we'd be able to have another legal method to address this issue with the non-residents and be able to still open that back up to harvest objective.
I know from a bear standpoint it's probably not significant, but if you had a huge amount of people go to the South Slope with the fawning and the calving because they couldn't be dispersed, which was how you envisioned it.
The fawning and the calving really happens later. Well, it starts there, of course. It's right there at the end of the hunt, but the main part that would be the bait hunt. And so we don't have the concerns on the fawning and the hunting during June during that bait hunt. It's just the last few days of the ham hunt. And so, but we didn't see these huge influxes. It didn't occur on the units next to that, like Yellowstone next to it on the Current Creek. We didn't, I mean, the first year you will. The first year it's going to be crazy. After that, it's settled out really well, and we kind of expect that's what it will do. It will really help in the future to have the book as a harvest objective in the spring, and it'll be beneficial. But I understand their concerns. They don't want a million non-residents right there trying to, you know, beat them to the 20 bears.
I'm not arguing with the book list.
Yeah.
But they're probably valid concerns. But if you get too few of them harvesting up the areas, then you defeated the purpose of what you're trying to do, right?
It does take a little bit of the support away for doing. They're the reason. But there we tried it with the Wasatch Mountains. It was the only one in the state that was that way in the spring. And it still works, I think, but everything we can add into it with the 9 Mile Anthro being its big area and same in the same general area too. A lot of folks have that opportunity out there, the Yellowstone and the Three Corners. We hope that would be enough.
And quite honestly, in the southern region, they had a harvest objective for 3 years down there and got absolutely no harvest.
That's in the fall hunt.
On the fall hunt, but I mean there has to be interest in that area in order to for people to go.
So, Chairman, I guess I got a question. How does that affect the vote we just did? If what Leslie just proposed to us, modifying the book with Bitter Creek South to taking it out of the harvest objective and adding the additional permits?
We already have the vote, and the vote passed, so I guess it would be
a
suggestion or a recommendation to the Wildlife Board. Discussion.
Yeah. I'll make the motion that they've got to follow up on that and lock them in, or everything's null and void tonight. I mean, can you put it in a motion? You can't put this in a motion.
Amend the motion. You amend the motion after it's been voted on.
I don't think so.
We've already voted on it.
Well, we can make the recommendation.
It's been voted on.
I think we need to make a recommendation to the board that the Wildlife Board that we do just what you proposed on the Bitter Creek South.
We will do that.
Okay. Yeah. We should have more discussion before we voted. Well, this kind of came to light after we voted, so.
Sorry.
That's okay. let's move on to the next one. Lastly, let's move on to the wolf management plan. The extension.
No changes, extension.
Yeah, it's out. It's information.
I just lost all my years.
So let me give you a little background just on our legal status currently. Wolves are delisted in a small portion of northern Utah. It's a small portion north of I-80. It includes parts of Ridge, Cache, Morgan, and Summit counties. Outside of that area, wolves are still protected by the Endangered Species Act, and management falls under the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Our state law directs our agency to prevent the establishment of wolves in any delisted areas of the state until the entire state is delisted. If we have wolves that occur in areas of our state that are listed, we request the service to remove them. Currently, wolves are proposed that wolves be delisted range-wide. And our plan here does not take effect until wolves are delisted statewide. This is your wolf region. But we have confirmed about 13 individual wolves in Utah over the past 10 years. Almost all the confirmations have come in counties that border Wyoming and Idaho, except for the one that just showed up on the rim in Grand Canyon on the north rim in Arizona. That one probably made the jump through Utah and ended up in Arizona. Currently, there's no evidence of breeding activity for any wolf in our state. And the last known recorded sighting of a wolf was this past fall by Brian Maxfield. It may still be in the Uintas. We did verify it through identification of the radio collar frequency. The radio collar that was on that wolf was close to being dead. So we don't know if the radio collar died and we're not hearing it, or if the wolf has moved on. Other than there have been no additional sightings since late September. Currently, our plan, it was passed by the board in 2005. It took 2 years to get this plan, agreement for this plan to be put into place. It was passed for a 10-year period. It's set to expire the end of this month. It's never gone into effect. But based on current legal and biological status, we're recommending extension of our current plan in anticipation that wolves will be delisted, and we're asking that the extension be good for 5 years.
I got a question.
Yeah.
What does that all mean? Do we still
exactly.
Shoot, shovel, and shut up?
Right.
It's a little confusing.
Well, our legislature directed us to have a plan. This is that plan. We want to have a plan in place in the event that wolves do become delisted that will help direct us when it happens. The problem is that it is so embroiled in legal battle, no matter which way they go, they will have lawsuits filed against them, and it will keep going in perpetuity. So we are just hoping to be able to use this plan when they.
I'm just asking to extend the current plan, which is going to go out of date in 3 weeks.
Yeah. And so we're just wanting to keep the plan in place as we've been directed to do.
It's worked great up till now.
It's a great plan.
That's all I asked.
It's a tool. Other questions by the rack?
I have a question. What do we have to do to put out the message that we don't want those kind of tracks in our state? They are unwelcome.
That message is out there.
the three yeses.
You have worked too hard for our deer and our elk herd and our sheep herd, and they are unwelcome in our state, as far as I'm concerned. Would you pass that message on?
Pass this plan and we'll send up the message.
I think you have the full support of our director.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure of that.
Okay, thank you.
Are there questions by the board, by the RAC? Okay, questions by the audience? Questions? Step to the mic, state your name, ask the question.
Tom, Matt, more than a question. My name's Ren Labrum.
We're not comments yet. Question.
Okay.
Got to get any questions on the presentation?
No, other than how can we get the wolves delisted on our area versus from IA?
We've been working on it, unfortunately, because of the way that it is right now. We've been told it's not going to happen real soon. So the service has taken comments on the proposed delisting, and unfortunately, they had to do a comment period, and they received thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of comments, and they have to go back and address all of those before they can. And Boy might know this better than I, because he's been involved with it longer than I have. But they have to address all of those comments in order for them. And the comments call into place their ability to delist them. So if they're in a situation right now that if they delist, they'll get sued. And if they don't, and so they're kind of stuck with the legal status right now. And so there's not really a lot we can do.
And that's U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah, I mean, this is all federal,
this is all federal
stuff. It's kind of out of our hands, and we just have to watch.
This is one of the reasons that it's really horrible when a species gets removed from the division's management and it gets set over to the Fish and Wildlife Service, where the Fish and Wildlife Service takes total control and then uses us as a buffer sometimes in between. And so the bad part of it is we really don't have any control until it gets put back to us and it gets taken off the list. And that's why we do everything that we can as an agency to help these species and do things for these species before they hit a list.
So examples would be the Utah prairie dog and sage grouse that we also work a lot with.
Okay. Any other questions from the audience?
It's the Utah prairie dog the opposite way, which is going to be a big deal how that's handled right now, because we just got that. The
office
of the
office. Yeah. Okay. Comments. Two comment cards here.
Not yet.
Yeah. These are questions.
Eight. Oh, these are eight.
We're on seven.
We're on seven. Thank you. I needed that. Thank you, sir.
That's what I'm here for. All right. I'm here for you, brother.
Okay. So what if we see elk or see the wolves out? We've seen things. Sometimes we see wolves in the state.
Let us know about it.
Don't pull it.
No three.
Don't pull it. Don't pull it.
Well,
no,
we
know.
No.
The
first meeting we had, it was accepted that we would accept the blue-eyed wolf.
Okay. Right. Okay. I don't have blue eyes.
I'm just saying.
Okay, we need to focus at the subject at hand. We need to look at the Wolf Management Plan extension. Okay? Comments by the board and entertain a motion.
I think it's a good thing.
So, I'll make a motion that we go ahead and accept the proposal to extend the Wolf Management Plan as it was presented here.
I'll second it.
Okay. Did you get that? Dan. Beth. Okay.
Vote.
Okay. Any discussion before we do the vote? We should have discussion before we did the vote last time, I guess.
I don't think we've got any alternative.
Gives us, it's a tool in the toolbox. Yeah. Those things go forward. Okay, all in favor? Unanimous? Nobody opposed? Okay, thank you. Let's go to Kenny Johnson, item 8, convention rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, and members of the public who stayed for the grand finale. Kenny Johnson, Admin Services Chief in Salt Lake City. Really quick, Wildlife Convention permits this rule R657-55. We're proposing three pretty straightforward changes to it, and we'll get to those specifically here in just a second. Let me start by giving you a little bit of background and some of the history. We, first of all, highly value, from the division standpoint, all of our conservation partners. Anybody willing to share in our mission to protect wildlife, enhance habitat, recruit new anglers, retain anglers and hunters, and reactivate those that have kind of stopped participating in our mission, we support the heck out of that. So the convention, we think, is a key piece to what we're trying to do, and some obvious overlap with our conservation partners. So some of the history on it, we adopted this rule back in 2005, and what it does is it provides 200 limited entry permits for a various species to be issued at a convention within the borders of Utah. It has to attract at least 10,000 attendees, and the contract is awarded to a conservation group with a demonstrated track record of enhancing and protecting wildlife species in our state. Permits are issued through a random draw process at $5 a hunt. The permits have been approved for 5 years at a time, and the Wildlife Board then each year approves the actual permits for that year, is how that works. And then these permits are subtracted from those approved for the traditional public drawings. The current status of this rule, in 2016, it will expire, it'll complete our second 5-year contract. In 2012, in late 2012, and effective in 2013, the rule was amended to do a couple of things. One, to provide a little more oversight with the application revenue, provide some audit provisions, and to separate, specifically that second bullet down, to specify that the contractor retain the same part of the $5 application fee that our other bucks and bulls draw keep. And then that would identify the remaining funds to be used specifically for division approved projects. And then that funding, the funds must be expended or committed 2 years after they're collected on September 1st. And so part of the audit, we keep up and monitor those funds. So we'll get to the three changes really quick. So the first one, pretty straightforward. We want to rename the convention. We've kind of called it convention forever, and we want to rename it convention and change that to expo. What we think this will do is kind of rebrand it and separate the concepts of conservation and convention. We have the conservation permit program and the convention permit program, and they kind of get tangled up in the public eye sometimes, and we think that'll alleviate some of those issues. Doing that small change, we refer back to convention permits in about 7 other rules, and I won't read through those, but what we have to do if this proposal goes through is update each of these specific pieces of rule and change the word convention to expo in each of these reference rules too. The second change we're proposing tonight, at the end of the 5-year contract, we'd like to allow the conservation organization to approach the division and the Wildlife Board for a possible extension upon mutual agreement of all three parties. And this will be, that second bullet down, for contracts awarded after 2016. So this doesn't apply to the current incumbent. So when this expires in 2016, there will be a new RFP. We'll entertain new proposals and award the expo permits again. And at the end of that 5 years, they could they could apply for that extension. And finally, in that amendment I mentioned a minute ago, we want to formalize in rule, instead of just making an amendment to the contract, we want to formalize in the rule that split of the revenue. And so we're proposing that the contract awardee be able to retain $3.50 per application, and that will identify the remaining funds for the division to use for those approved projects. We think that adds some transparency to that funding. And that is all I have.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from the board?
Yeah, I've got a question. So currently, what does the contractor retain of that $5? Is it half?
It's this year it was $3.01.
$3.01.
It was the same portion of what we paid our contractor for the Bucks and Bulls, I see. And so the way that works, we actually renegotiate that. I try to negotiate that down and save us as much money as I can every year. And so they're kind of going in two different directions. I negotiate that down a little bit because our apps in the Bucks and Bulls contract are increasing a little bit. So that's kind of good news. But it's driving the retained portion down here. They're completely night and day. They're apples and oranges. So we think this is a fair compromise to kind of standardize that.
Another question is, the extension, for the five-year extension, mentioned it would go through, it was agreed upon between the division and the contractor and the wildlife board, would that go through a RAC process approval as well, or just the wildlife board?
Right now we specify just the wildlife board, and we didn't even really formalize what kind of format that would be, the meeting or anything, so we could probably look at that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. A couple questions. Once, like I said, you've got those holding the funds have 2 years to commit the funds. Does that mean they have to be spent, or does that just mean they have to have it earmarked and say, oh, we're going to build this fence, or we're going to clear this area? Or what is that word commitment?
That's exactly it. They have to be specified for a project that's approved. So it can't just be something to dream up and hoping to do something. It's got to be a specific project and signed off by the director.
Okay.
Or expanding. We prefer expanding, but we'll take a good solid project. It's that, you know, maybe the timing is weird in a month or two or three out. So.
Any other questions?
I have a question related to the what's going to happen in 2021. So prior to that, the conservation organization meets with the division and the wildlife board. Is there any avenue if there is a different conservation organization that would apply for a request for a proposal if one was offered? Because if they could make the deal just between the conservation organization and the wildlife board division, doesn't that kind of eliminate the opportunity for other conservation organizations to apply?
It's one way to look at it, but having the three groups mutually agree, if it's a good thing and it's working and it's meeting the mission that this rule was created to do, it allows them a little longer term commitment to some of their venues and things like that. So, yeah, it would for five more years preclude more bids, but if it's working and it's successful, the idea is why disrupt it.
Is there any avenue for a conservation organization that wanted to appeal the process?
They could come and talk to the board, I'm thinking, in the discussion.
Okay.
Another question?
Yeah.
So Kenny, right now the contractor is getting about 60% of that $5. So why would the division recommend? Why the increase, I guess?
The increase, we've kind of met with them off and on to try to understand their cost structure a little bit better.
Yeah.
And their costs aren't fixed. So they, you know, their cost to kind of just run their mission and put on the convention and do all the things associated with it, their costs continue to go up every year. And so the fees they showed us kind of justify the $350 and
probably even higher, but we were comfortable with it at the 350.
I think it also encourages them to toe the line and try to get better.
Yeah.
We're doing that.
Other questions?
On that fee, it seems like the $5 has been there for a long time. Do you guys ever increase, is the application fee ever been increased?
It hasn't. And there's some kind of strategy behind that, too. You know, the idea is to attract as many people as we can to get them excited about hunting and wildlife recreation in Utah. And so they're kind of walking a fine line to try to not price people out of that opportunity. So it's been discussed, but right now there's no plans to change that.
Because it's really a pretty minimal fee. Mm-hmm. Even if you doubled it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, last year I had the opportunity to attend the Wildlife Board meeting when they discussed this. And I was impressed by all the different organizations that were part of this, got up and presented what they did and how they're being audited and how it's all being tracked and how you guys are watching over it real close. And I think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, we agree.
Okay. Any questions from the audience? Any questions from the public? Okay. The RAC. Any discussions, other questions, or your comments? It's getting late. We better have our comments from our two individuals here and with us. Ken Strong, if you can get up and make your comments. And after that.
Ken Strong, representing Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We're one of the partners in the Hunting Expo. I'll give you an idea of some of the things that the Expo's done. In 2009, it brought in over $8.5 million into the economy for the state of Utah. The last few Expos, it's brought in between $10 and $11 million into the economy. The $5 application fee, the money that we get from that has done several things. And from 2012 to 2014, we spent $180,000 growing and releasing approximately 35,000 pheasants that hopefully some of you people get out and enjoy hunting them. Our plan with that is to get youth involved in hunting. To create public interest in pheasant hunting, and right now we're experimenting and raising our own birds to segment the wild population and bolster natural reproduction once released. And we're also doing on the East Pontagaunt a water catch project, which is $31,000, and all the transplants you've seen with the mule deer transplanted from Perro in front, Antelope Island, to the Pavant and to the Oak Creeks. And there's planned also in the process of drafting a transplant fact sheet that will include New Mexico and British Columbia. I bring that up because, as you know, the conservation permits that are sold, that money's designated for that animal that permit went for. And yet, we put $35,000 into pheasants. That came elsewhere. We put $10,000 into tiger muskie for Joes Valley Reservoir. We pay $7,500 a year to the division to raise the fish bigger for Strawberry Reservoir. So I think it's a great plan, and I don't think that the $3.50 is really that much, considering all of the things that it can do and has been doing in the past. Thank you.
Thank you. Kenyon Powell, Mule Deer Foundation.
My name's Kenyon Powell. I'm here to represent the Mule Deer Foundation and the Western Hunting and Conservation Expo.
held at Salt Palace each February, is rapidly becoming the largest show of its kind in the West. The expo permits offered through the drawing at the expo give hunters more opportunity to draw Covenant Utah limited entry tags without the use of bonus points and also without mandatory waiting periods. As a result of the expo, approximately $12.6 million annually is infused into Utah's economy through hotels, restaurants, and other travel-related industries. The Mule Deer Foundation strongly supports the Utah Division of Wildlife in its decision to modify the rule regarding the convention permits. The Mule Deer Foundation also strongly supports the proposed changes to the rule. The Mule Deer Foundation urges all RAC members to approve the rule change. And on the $5, like you were saying, on the $5, you know, a lot of people feel that hunting is a rich man's sport. This is an opportunity for everybody to get a chance, for just the $5 to get a chance at a Covenant tag. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, back to the RAC. Comments, questions? Motion.
I'd like to make a comment. I'd like to, I think we need to thank these sportsmen's groups that get involved and put this expo together. I can't imagine all the work that it takes to put that show together. I think they do an excellent job. We appreciate their efforts and their work, and we appreciate the benefits that we get with our wildlife and our state from it. Thank you.
Excellent. Any other questions or comments by the RAC? Entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. We approve it as presented.
Motion is presented by Randy. Second?
I'll second it.
Beth, second it. All in favor? Unanimous. Okay. If that's everything we have on the agenda, we have a little more other business here. Boyd has something for us.
I just want to say thank you for coming and taking time out of your schedules. I know you're all real busy, especially at this time of year. Some of you missed Christmas parties and stuff like that. Maybe you'd sooner be here than your Christmas parties. I don't know. But I want to thank you, Carol. And I just am real proud of this RAC. The questions that you guys ask and the thought that you put into these things is absolutely amazing. And second, no other region in the state. Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate it.
Great.
As long as you keep coming, I'll keep flattering by
So, do we need a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second it.
That's pretty